Badger Badge. Night gathers, and now our podcast begins. It shall not end until we're done talking. We are
the princes that were promised.
Welcome to the Princes That Were Promised. It's me, it's Shawnee Wan, and joining me as always is John, and we are back for the second edition, the sequel, if you will, to our brand new, possibly regular mini-sode series, Prophecies in A Song of Ice and Fire, Game of Thrones. But it's not just prophecies, it's also prophetic dreams, visions, what have you. Today, I thought it might be kind of interesting to go over a prophetic dream that my favorite character from A Song of Ice and Fire, Jaime Lannister, a dream that he had in A Storm of Swords. Knowing that it's from A Storm of Swords, it does make it a little more interesting because, and we'll get to this when we talk a little bit about a certain Lannister excluded from this prophetic dream, but his exclusion from this dream and this dream taking place during A Storm of Swords, I think is a little bit telling. You think so, John?
Definitely.
Tyrion Lannister, at this point in A Storm of Swords, he's not acting hand to the king anymore, but he's master of coin and living comfortably, well, I don't know about comfortably, but living at King's Landing and in good standing with the crown for the most part. Just real quick, I don't know if you feel the same way, but looking at the whole of what we have of A Song of Ice and Fire and looking at the whole of Game of Thrones, and I'm going to talk a little bit about Tyrion, even though this is Jaime's dream. But when we talk about the acts to a story, three acts, or halves to a tale, the act changes along with Tyrion's situation changing. I guess I've always known that, and I'm sure you've always known it, and maybe you've realized it already, but Tyrion has his adventure during the events of A Game of Thrones, and he arrives at King's Landing. The time that he's at King's Landing, it's like an introduction part to A Song of Ice and Fire, and it's not until he escapes King's Landing, the entire story changes, and we get a new act of this story. And I think that's true for Game of Thrones also. He's at King's Landing until season 4, he leaves at the end of season 4, and season 5 is a lot different than what we've had up to that point in Game of Thrones. And Tyrion's situation changes again at the end of season 6 when he returns to Westeros with a new queen. I'm sure it'll be the case in A Song of Ice and Fire also. But looking at Tyrion, and this was the prophecy last week, Makaro talking about Tyrion being in the middle of all this chaos among dragons.
Right.
He's in the middle of everything in A Song of Ice and Fire. All the events of A Song of Ice and Fire.
Well, I always felt that he was the, or will be the connecting point through a lot of the main characters. Namely Jon and Dany, obviously, which we see in the show now.
Yeah.
Going to safely assume we'll see in the books also. But he's also, obviously, he's got the connection point with Jaime and Cersei, you know, obviously, you know, being related to them.
Mm-hmm.
So he's in the cusp of it all, so to speak.
That kind of just dawned on me a little bit, and I wanted to comment on that. Jaime's dream, which occurs in, I think it's Jaime chapter 3, is what they're saying, of A Storm of Swords, which is the third book. And this occurs while Jaime is on his way back to King's Landing, accompanied by men from the north, accompanied by loyal men to House Bolton. I'm not sure that they're flying the banner of House Bolton, because they are going through the Riverlands, which is still technically enemy territory. Steelshanks Walton is a captain in Roose Bolton's army, the House Bolton infantry. And Steelshanks Walton is leading Jaime, and I do believe it was 70 men, bringing him back to King's Landing. And this is Roose's heel turn. This is where he's turning on Rob by sending Jaime back to Tywin Lannister.
Mm-hmm.
Jaime's also lost his hand, and Roose knows that Tywin's going to be angry that Jaime has lost his hand. And Roose says that if you can convince your father that that was not my fault, even though my man, referring to fucking the Brave Companions, the guy with the lisp.
Oh.
Fargo Hoat. Fargo Hoat. It's another Bolton man in Game of Thrones also.
Locke.
Locke, yeah, which is an actual house in A Song of Ice and Fire, though there is no character Locke that cuts off Jaime's hand. And Song of Ice and Fire is Vargo Hoat under Roose Bolton's command. They're a free company that has taken Roose Bolton's money. So Roose is basically saying to Jaime, if I free you, your dad's going to think that my man cut off your hand and he may want revenge. Jaime says, if you free me, I will sing very sweet songs about you. Pretty much saying, listen, you let me go, you send me back to King's Landing, don't worry about the hand. It seems like Roose is thankful for that, but I think it's actually Roose being very, very clever. I think he wanted Fargo Hope to take his hand, and I think he believes that Tywin will see what Jaime's not seeing, and that is, I took your son's hand because I am a northerner. Mm-hmm. I fight for the north. I fight for my king. But same time, the leadership in the north has to change. So I took his hand because you're my enemy, but I could have killed him. So let's talk. What can we do for each other? So Jaime's on his way back. He's left Brienne there. He doesn't seem to feel too bad about it, knowing that she's going to be there and she's going to be raped by all of Vargo Hoat's men and eventually killed. They stop. He gets some sleep. And he ends up putting his head upon the stump of a weirwood tree. The fact that he's sleeping on a weirwood tree is what gives some validity to the dream that he has. He dreams that he is at home, that he's at Casterly Rock. He knows it's a dream because in his dreams he has both his hands. He notices that he is surrounded by a dozen tall figures in robes, and the robes hide their faces so he doesn't know who they are. They all have spears in their hands, and they're using the spears to drive him down deeper and deeper into the rock. Deep into the rock, he sees his father, Lord Tywin, his twin sister, Cersei, and his son, King of the Seven Kingdoms, at this point alive.
It was so long ago.
Yeah. Joffrey Baratheon, first of his name. He wonders what this place is, and he is told, it's your place. Not by Tywin, Cersei, or Joffrey. He's told this by an echoing voice, and somehow he believes this voice is the voice of all the Lannisters, since Lan the Clever. Tywin, Cersei, and Joffrey turn to leave. As they leave, Jaime begs them not to leave him alone in the dark. Just like that, Brienne appears. She appears naked, chained up, and she begs him to cut the chains. So he does. Then he hears his sister Cersei call, "The flames will burn so long as you live. When they die, so must you." After Cersei leaves, six riders come near. These riders, he knows who they are. Oswell Went, Jon Darry, Lewin Martell, Gerald Hightower, Arthur Dayne, and Rhaegar Targaryen. Brienne says she swore an oath to keep him safe, and Arthur Dayne replies to her, "We all swore oaths." The other Kingsguard accuse him of failing his duty, and Rhaegar tells him he had trusted him to keep his wife and children safe. And then the flames start going out until the only flame left is Brienne's sword, which is burning, and the ghosts are rushing towards him. This scares the shit out of him, and he wakes up.
Yeah, I was just going to say that that's a lot to digest there. I don't really, wow.
A lot to digest there, yeah. We'll take it piece by piece and try to minimize how far off we go, but honestly, a lot of this stuff, I really have no idea. But let's start at the beginning. So he's at home at Casterly Rock, and he has both his hands. So we know that he knows it's a dream, because in his dream, he always has mm-hmm. both his hands. And that's something that he says before this chapter. Or maybe he says it right there at this chapter. He knew it was a dream right. because he had both his hands. He sees that he is surrounded by a dozen tall figures in robes. And the robes hide their faces, and they're armed with spears. This makes me think of Essos. This makes me think of Dorne. This makes me think of Unsullied because of the spears. Why wouldn't they have swords? Another possibility is maybe they're common folk, because common folk can't afford steel. A spear is a cheaper weapon mm-hmm. to have than a sword. But the robes that hide their faces, why the mystery? I don't know. They drive them deep down into the rock. What do you think? Who do you think these guys are? Or are they anybody?
What bothers me with this is the fact that it goes on to say later, six of them approach, and it's most of the Kingsguard and Rhaegar Targaryen, so if that right. means six of the 12,
right.
then are they just meant to be 12 figures and until they show their face in which six of the 12 are? Then I was thinking that maybe when I first read it, I took it as, well, if there's 12, then what could be 12? What do we know that's 12?
Right, yeah.
Okay. The only thing I can think of is 12 White Walkers and the 13th and 9th King.
Hmm.
But then if six of them come forward and six of them are Oswald Went, Jon Darry, Lewin Martell, Hightower, Arthur Dayne, Rhaegar Targaryen, then that kind of just throws that.
Yeah.
I just think that maybe it's just 12 figures until their faces come clear.
I don't know if I connect a dozen tall figures in robes to the six riders. Is possible?
Just, yeah, maybe it's separate.
Yeah, it might be separate. In which case, maybe it is more along the lines of what you were thinking.
And they might have swords. They might have ice spears.
Yeah. And the robes that hide their faces. It could also be more of a metaphorical thing fear of the unknown drives him deeper into Casterly Rock. But there are other passages. I think we might have to go forward. Oh, no, I'm sorry. We could go back to his conversation with Catelyn at the end of A Clash of Kings when he says, I forget the fuck he says, but he's telling her about the dungeons in Casterly Rock because he's in a dungeon at River Run and she is apologizing for the conditions there or whatever the fuck she's doing before she frees him.
Yeah, God. Rob. Stay tuned.
Yeah. Jamie says, this is nothing. This is great. There are dungeons deep in the bowels of Casterly Rock that make this look like a paradise. Perhaps one day I'll be able to show them to you. He's always a smartass. Not that he's fearful of the dungeons in Casterly Rock, but it's not a place that he thinks highly of. Obviously, they're dungeons, but they must be very poor conditions, very dark. You know, the bowels of Casterly Rock, real deep into the mountainside in which Casterly Rock is built into. So you also get the feeling that whatever this is, going that deep into Casterly Rock, it's a dream. He's going that deep into his subconscious. It's going to be, in a certain level, cathartic, whatever the results of this dream are. And when he gets there, deep into Casterly Rock, he sees his father, Tywin Lannister. He sees his sister, Cersei Lannister. And he sees his firstborn son with Cersei Lannister, Joffrey Baratheon. So going back to my monologue at the beginning, why is Tyrion not here? Because at this point in time, Tyrion and Jaime are very good friends. They're in good standing with each other. And yet Tyrion's not here in the bowels of Casterly Rock and in what could possibly be the bowels of Jaime Lannister's subconscious. It's a specific choice for George not to include Tyrion.
Right. Almost goes out of his way not to include him.
So do you think it has to do with what we were discussing last week with Tyrion and Tyrion possibly being a dragon more than a lion?
Right. It definitely can lead credibility to that.
Yeah, you could draw that conclusion.
And again, gun to my head, Tyrion is the Targaryen.
If you base it off this as a clue, yeah, it would put Tyrion in light of being the Targaryen, if there is a secret Targaryen. But for Jaime, it's almost as though he doesn't see Tyrion as, I don't want to say a true Lannister, but maybe he doesn't see Tyrion as passionate or caring as much about the pride of House Lannister. He's not there deep in the rock where his father is there, and his father, everything he does is for the good of House Lannister. Cersei likes to think of herself as Tywin Lannister reborn, and even though most of her decisions are bad and hurt House Lannister in a roundabout way, mm-hmm. She does think that her decisions are for the good of House Lannister the same way that Tywin's are. It is interesting that Joffrey's there because it's just interesting anything with Jaime and Joffrey. Joffrey is his firstborn son, king of Westeros. But Joffrey has no idea. It's a huge, huge lie for someone to live with. Forget the incest part of it. You had a child with a woman, married and queen, and the king thinks that the child that's yours is his, and you can't say anything. Because it'll be the death of you and the death of the child, so you have to act like it's not your kid. So it's interesting that Joffrey is there and that Tyrion is not there.
It also says, by echoing the voice of all the Lannisters since Land the Clever.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like that's just pointing to him being a Lannister and that, you know, not being the Targaryen.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah, I have to agree with that. Now, listen, I'm sure I could read a couple things that make a case for Jaime and Cersei and be right back on board. But reading this, that's what I get from it, is Jaime is a Lannister. Joffrey being there, and the choice of Tywin, Cersei, and Joffrey, it makes me think, I don't get the vibe that Tywin fancies himself as a wise, strategic ruler. He is. He clearly is. But you never get the vibe that he's anything but modest about that. He's aware of his skill set, and he does what he has to do. Cersei likes to think of herself as Tywin, and she thinks that any decision she makes is like a brilliant tactical decision. Joffrey has shown hints of thinking he's making a decision for a well-thought-out reason. Clearly, he's never made a good decision, Joffrey. Everything he's done has been a cowardly, pompous, arrogant decision. Right.
Vicious decision.
But in his head, it's logical. So, you look, yeah, but then you look at the descent, Tywin to Cersei to Joffrey. If you think that Tywin assumes he's this intelligent, wise, forward-minded ruler, Cersei and Joffrey definitely think that they are. When it really, from generation to generation, it gets worse. And they leave when they hear that echoing voice. Jamie's wondering what this place is. He doesn't say aloud. He wonders what this place is, and he's told it's your place by the echoing voice, which he takes as all the Lannisters since Lan the Clever. The others turn to leave. He begs them not to leave him alone in the dark. The vibe I get from this is Joffrey dies shortly after. Tywin dies shortly after that. We're all assuming that Cersei is going to exit life before Jaime.
Mm-hmm.
They're all going to abandon him at some point, especially if Tyrion is a Targaryen or Targaryen bastard.
Mm-hmm.
Jaime will be the final Lannister, at least the final Lannister of the main branch of
the Lannisters. Main group. Yeah, exactly. The main group.
Yeah, the A team.
The main players.
Right. You'll still have your Sir Kevins kicking them. Oh, no, not anymore, but
yeah,
you know. So before things take a turn, this occurs in A Song of Ice and Fire. So the other Lannisters that we're aware of, one of them went missing in the King's Landing riots. So Tywin's only surviving siblings, Jaime Lannister, she married into the Freys, and Kevin Lannister, his only son is, why am I not remembering his name?
Marcel.
No.
Lancel.
Lancel, yeah. Marcel.
Lancel Lannister. Kevin's name is Lancel Lannister.
Get the breastplate extender. Lancel is losing his mind. He wants to take an oath. He wants to give up his land and fortunes, and he wants to give up his wife later on. I mentioned Davin Lannister, who's way later in A Song of Ice and Fire, is actually named Warden of the East. He's not married. Or maybe he is married, but he doesn't have children. And he's more of a cadet branch of House Lannister. And then the other two kids who would have been the heirs to Casterly Rock, two of them are killed by Rickard Karstark, and one of them goes missing, presumably dead, during the King's Landing riots, although there are those theories that Varys has him hitting for the end of the story, and he could whip him out and be like, oh, here's your heir to fucking Casterly Rock. Long story short, unless Jaime's going to procreate, if Tyrion is a Targaryen bastard, that's the end of House Lannister, because Joffrey and Tommen and Marcella, they're not Lannisters. So what appears to be a full-size family with the future safe and secure, you take away the children of incest, the events that happened at King's Landing, the results of the war, and suddenly, really, it's only Jaime that's left. Brienne appears out of the dark. She's naked, and she's in chains, and she begs him to cut the chains, which he does.
What'd you take on that?
Well, I'm wondering why she appears naked,
right,
and in chains. Like, he didn't see her. Well, he did see her in chains during the journey with Vargo Hope to Harrenhal, and he did see her naked when he joined her in the hot pool,
mm-hmm,
before he passes out.
Mm-hmm.
The use of Brienne is important, but her appearing naked and in chains, I take that as he is feeling very scared and very vulnerable at this moment, begging his family not to leave him alone in the dark. Brienne comes out, and it seems to me that she's the most honorable person he knows at this point. And her being naked and in chains, those are two times that he saw her that she was vulnerable. And I guess that's why she appears in that way. She's also vulnerable and scared at that moment. And the difference being, she's more scared because she's in chains. So she begs him to cut the chains. So Jaime's scared to be left alone in the dark. Brienne's scared to be in chains so she can't defend herself. She can't use physical force to defend herself. And I think that's pretty telling of both their characters. He cuts the chains, and then he hears Cersei call. The flames will burn so long as you live, and when they die, so must you. Some candles start burning at this point, and then she says that. The flames will burn so long as you live, when they die, so must you. You can really easily make the metaphor of a flame representing life, but
mm-hmm,
I'm not even sure. What do you take from that quote?
The only thing that strikes me out a little bit, not the only thing, but the fact that he's thinking about Brienne, and then at this time, all of a sudden, Cersei appears.
Right. Yeah.
You know, he cuts Brienne's chains as if he's helping her.
Right.
Then all of a sudden, Cersei comes in, almost like
jealousy.
Kind of like, right, exactly. Like, now I gotta say something. You know, the guy get his mind back to me.
Do you take it as she's saying this to him, the flames will burn so long as you live. When they die, so must you. It's a warning. I mean, is she just trying to get his attention, or is she trying to say that to be helpful? Is she see Brienne feel like she needs to help Jaime and not leave him alone?
I would say it's a warning. If this is a prophetic dream, I think she's warning flames will live, will burn, so you'll live. But once they die, you'll die.
Okay. You think it's possible that whatever ending there is in store for Cersei and Jaime Lannister, do you think it will have to do with fire or... I mean, it looks like that's the case in Game of Thrones, but do you think this could be twisted another way when they both actually do die or whatever their fate is? Do you think this quote will be important, or do you think this is just a metaphorical thing that she's saying for this dream that he's having currently? Basically, will this come into play later on in The Song of Ice and Fire in a scene that we haven't read yet? The flames will burn so long as you live. When they die, so must you.
I'm going to say it'll come. There'll be something burning near him, and that will go out when he dies.
Okay.
There's got to be some sort of like prophetic symbolism, irony involved.
A double meaning this. Sorts.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, she leaves again. And right after she leaves, that's when six riders seem to come nearer from the dark.
Mm-hmm.
And we know these six riders. Oswell Went, we know, is with the Kingsguard. John Darry, Lewin Martell, Gerald Hightower, Arthur Dayne, all members of the Kingsguard. And what is probably most interesting and most telling is that Rhaegar Targaryen is the last of the six figures to appear in front of him. John Darry, remind me, he was Kingsguard and he died on the Trident, right?
On the Trident, yes. As did Lewin Martell also, at the Trident.
Whereas Oswald Went, Gerald Hightower, Arthur Dayne, obviously they all died at the...
Tower of Joy.
Sir Barristan the Bold is not here.
He's not dead.
Yeah, he's still alive. Still alive. There's no feelings of guilt
right, that
Jaime has with them.
I want to bring up something real... Yeah, this is good. I just want to bring up something real quick, and it's something that this leaves some credibility toward that. Any time in these books that we have characters that have dreams of simply past characters, in this tense, the past characters that we know are dead, that means they're really dead. Rhaegar is not Mance Rayder. Arthur Dayne is not Mance Rayder. Rhaegar Targaryen is not Jaqen H'ghar. The fact that we have dreams of these people means that they're dead.
I'm trying to think if there is a situation where somebody that we thought was dead was dreamed of, but then we see him later on. The only characters that I could think of are like the Hound we thought was dead. He may be dead in The Song of Ice and Fire, but I really don't think so. John Connington was presumed dead, and he's not.
But they don't have dreams. They don't have dreams of them. Like, if you have a dream, like Theon Greyjoy having a dream of Lyanna Stark, well, because Lyanna's dead. Ned having the dream of all his friends at the Tower of Joy, plus the three Kingsguardmen, because they're dead.
Theon's dream, the dream he has of the feast with Ned and Robert and Rob and all of these people that were there for the first couple chapters of Game of Thrones, Robert's welcoming feast, except now they're all dead and he sees the wounds that killed them. And he notices that the Great Hall of Winterfell is filled with dead people.
This is really just all about guilt.
Yeah.
This is like really pouring on. The kings are there, like, you know, like Brienne says that she swore an oath to keep him safe. And Arthur Dayne replies, we all swore oaths. Then the Kingsguard accused him of failing his duty of protecting the king. He actually killed the king.
Mm-hmm.
Protecting, you know, so it's all about, this is like Jaime's like subconscious. And since he just came from the bat scene, and he's thinking about the king, about, you know, being called Kingslayer and why he did it, et cetera, et cetera. This is like his subconscious, these members of the Kingsguard, again, that guilt over him. And then Rhaegar tells him, hey, he trusted to keep his wife and his children safe.
I find that part of the passage to be the most interesting. Rhaegar tells him he had trusted him to keep his wife and his children safe. I don't know about for you, but definitely for me, we went through a couple months ago with Robert's Rebellion. When we consider what happened at King's Landing, the sack of King's Landing, Jaime becoming the Kingslayer, whether that was right or wrong to kill his king. Yeah, he betrayed his oath, but wasn't it the right thing to do? There is another side to that coin that kind of gets overlooked, and that is he wasn't protecting Rhaegar's wife or children at all. The king didn't need protecting at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
He left nobody with Rhaegar's wife and children. When we talk about the sack of King's Landing, when we consider what Jaime did and the morality of it.
But you're saying that Rhaegar forgot about his own.
Rhaegar too, but it seems that I think Jaime forgot about them. Rhaegar forgot about them. They were all afterthoughts in all this going on. They were the real collateral damage of all of this. Jaime had to kill Arryes to save King's Landing, but it didn't seem like he made any attempt to protect Rhaegar's wife and children. It didn't seem like Rhaegar really thought about Rhaegar's wife and children, allowing his father to keep them at King's Landing. And I don't think it's touched on enough, and I feel like this is one of the first times that the guilt, the decision to leave them where they were that is touched on is this dream from Jaime. And I think him looking at that part of the equation really shows that his character is growing by leaps and bounds, but is now able to look at a much bigger picture. You meet Jaime Lannister and he's the kind of guy that's like, I'm going to do whatever I want. I'm the greatest swordsman that ever lived. I'm the King's Guard because I'm one of the greatest knights. I killed Arias because he's going to burn down King's Landing and kill all these innocent people. There are two sides to each of those statements. You could argue for Jaime Lannister. You could argue against Jaime Lannister. But here, Jaime's looking at another piece of the puzzle. He left Elia Martell, Aegon Targaryen, and Rhaenys. I'm never, ever going to get Rhaegar's daughter's name.
Rhaenys.
Rhaenys. Oh, I got it right. Okay. And Rhaenys, he just left them to the wolves, what I thought in the world. And their fate was so fucking horrible. It's so horrible. And I think it's real interesting that he recognizes that now in the form of Rhaegar Targaryen in his subconscious telling him that he trusted him.
That's what I'm thinking. That's my thought process. Maybe it's not even so much that Rhaegar is coming up to him, but it's his subconscious that he thinks Rhaegar is beating him over for the loss of his children. You know what I'm saying? Because there's that other dream where he's talking with Rhaegar. It might have been the dream in the Dance of Dragons where Jaime tries to excuse himself, like, I didn't know the children would be harmed, blah, 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 blah. Rhaegar once again says, my children. And Jaime brings up that I didn't know the children would be harmed. It wasn't about that. I didn't think, you know, that he would do what he did.
Which part was this?
Wasn't that in the dream, in Dance of Dragons? Or there was another dream that he had when he thinks back to when he wanted to fight with Rhaegar.
When he wanted to go ride with Rhaegar, and Rhaegar said,
yeah,
I wouldn't dare to leave my father with no protection. Maybe there are prophetic parts to this dream, but there are definitely metaphorical parts to it. A big reflective side to this passage. Brienne says she swore an oath to keep him safe, and Arthur Dayne replies that we all swore oaths. Jaime swore an oath. Rhaegar swore an oath when he married Elia. Everybody in the bowels of Casterly Rock, in Jaime's dream, they all swore oaths. It sounds like the dead people that swore an oath are all angry at Jaime for not keeping his oath. We've talked about Rhaegar in depth. Sure, not intentionally, but he did betray some of his oaths. Put people in danger with decisions he made for the good of the realm, but there was collateral damage that caused him to break the most basic oath, the wedding oath, to love and protect your wife. He didn't do that. His decision led to the Mountain That Rides and Armory Lorch dashing his son's head against the wall, making a mutilated bloody mess out of his daughter, raping his wife with chunks of his son's brain on them, and then killing her. I can't think of a worse fate for them. Gerald Hightower, Arthur Dayne, and Oswald Went. Were they breaking an oath at the Tower of Joy? Technically, no, because of who Jon becomes. He's the heir, he's the king, and Rhaegar must have convinced him that this is the right thing to do, but this is Jaime's dream, and he doesn't know that.
Right. And I was just gonna mention that, actually, also. Like, in Jaime's mind, maybe again subconsciously, he just thinks that Rhaegar, you know, why weren't you there to protect my wife and children? He doesn't think enough to even say that, you know, that Rhaegar had, you know, another wife. He doesn't know about it. It's not in his conscience to know about it.
As far as Jaime's concerned, Rhaegar kidnapped Lyanna. That's the working story. Now Rhaegar's back to help fight the war that he started by kidnapping Lyanna. Jaime, he feels the guilt.
It's because it's the guilt he knows.
Right. And he's been living with it, even though he's probably, up until this point, been ignoring it. At the same time, all these men that he looked up to, his colleagues, based on the information he has, they're also oath breakers. He's got Brienne on his side, and Brienne, she's not an oath breaker. She hasn't done anything to break an oath. And the way he sees Brienne, not so much innocent as true, as honorable. Her on his side gives him strength. The flames start going out until only Brienne's sword is burning. I think that's Jaime seeing what he thinks is the bigger picture. There is even a bigger picture than that, which is why Rhaegar made the decision he made. Hightower, Arthur Dayne, Oswald Went. That's why they all made the decisions they made. The bigger picture that Jaime can't possibly see because he doesn't have that information. He is scared as the ghosts are rushing towards him. He screams and wakes up. And when he wakes up, there's no question, there's no hesitation in his actions. He commands Steelshanks Walton to accompany him back to Harrenhal to rescue Brienne. At first, Steelshanks is like, no way, dude, you're crazy. Roose has already marched. The castle belongs to Vargo Hoat. I'm not taking Brienne away from Vargo Hoat. That's Roose's gift to him. And then Jaime doesn't make a threat. He doesn't get arrogant and cocky. He promises listen, help me out with this and I'll reward you, which he ends up doing. He keeps his word. So this is definitely, without a doubt, a rebirth of Jaime Lannister. And that's why I really liked in season 7, his move at Highgarden. Tywin-like move.
Sick move.
I wish we could have seen more of that. I think we will in The Song of Ice and Fire.
Tywin-like move with the Robb Stark experience of losing a Robb Stark. It's just funny, the ghosts rush towards him. Like, what are the ghosts? Maybe it's the ghosts are just his past.
It's interesting that they're ghosts. Well, I mean, they're ghosts because they're dead. But if you have a dream and you have a dead person in the dream, they don't appear as a ghost. They appear as themselves. So it's interesting that they're ghosts. I think you hit the nail on the head. Ghosts of his past. Because those are ghosts he's been living with. What they were to Jaime when they were alive. They signify the guilt that Jaime has about this period in time and the decisions that he made. The difficulty he's having living with it. Trying to ignore something that you did. If you know it's wrong, you can justify it to other people. You can lie to yourself and say you're justifying it to yourself. But after years of reflecting on it, you argue yourself down and you can't justify what you did and you can't live with what you did. And then the only option is to let proper justice run its course. I think it'll be interesting where Jaime's character has done. I am a little bit disappointed in how Benioff and Weiss have handled it. I do understand he's one of many moving parts. Knowing where Jaime is at the end of A Dance with Dragons, running off with Brienne to confront Lady Stoneheart, we know Brienne is leading him into a trap. Does Jaime survive this encounter with Lady Stoneheart?
Yes.
I fucking hope so, bro. Catelyn Stark, even though she's a little bit cooler as an undead zombie.
She's never cool. She'll always messes things up.
I hope he kills her twice.
Kills her 3 times. Just for good measure.
Kills her, makes Thoros give her the kiss of life again, just to kill her again. All right, guys, thank you for listening. You can find us facebook.com/thepromisedprinces. Follow us on Twitter, @princespromised. tumblr.com/theprincesthatwerepromised or princesthatwerepromised.tumblr.com. I don't know, whatever it is. It's just a rehash of whatever's going on Twitter. The Westerosi Companion is @theprincesthatwerepromised.com. And check out our new RSS feed home site, which is thepromisedprinces.actionpackpodcasts.com. You can find us on Apple Podcasts. You can find us on Google Play, Stitcher. Please leave a review. It will mean the world to us. We appreciate it. John, always a pleasure. And we'll speak with you guys next week. Bum, 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 bum